Well, hi, everyone, and thank you so much for being my guest today for the Tell Me podcast series, episode number 7, which focuses on the power of one, which allows each of us to create moments that can change lives for the better. How are you today? Lots to wrap our head and hearts around, so I'm hoping to bring some positivity and send a little love your way. Really excited. I have a wonderful guest with me today, Cass Forkin, who is an inspirational thought leader, a mystic, a prayer, an MBA business executive, vice president of Arnig LLC, a multi-million dollar business started by Cass and her husband, Bill Belknap, in 2012. Lots of different titles this beautiful woman holds. But first, let me give a shout out to Hardenberg Insurance Group. Hardenberg has been providing business and family insurance for over 60 years. They're a family-owned and operated company. They operate in the Delaware Valley as well as 42 states across the country. If you'd like to get in touch with them, their number is 856-489-9100. The guest that I have with me today is the founder of a national nonprofit, Twilight Wish, which has granted to date an unbelievable number of wishes for seniors in need, 3,333 wishes to be exact. It started in 2003, and I'm honored to call her my friend. She is a global humanitarian and a philanthropist championing great causes. Cass has the rare mix of being both a passionate visionary and a business person who gets things done. She has education, experience, and the drive it takes to make a vision a reality. She is a national speaker on topics of business and spirituality, and is authoring a trilogy based on the past decade of adventures, crossing the world to follow a calling. Cass's dream is to be an international bestseller of books on spirituality while living an authentic life. You know, one of the beauties about this show is that I can bring in people of all backgrounds, beliefs, and faiths. And I love that. And Cass has had quite an extraordinary string of events that have happened to her in her life. And I'm hoping that you'll find these stories as inspirational as I did and do. And she really is a light in this world. So with that being said, let's bring her in. Hi, Cass.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
I'm so freaking excited. I can't even tell you. How are you today?
Doing great.
Tell me what's on your mind.
So what's on my mind is the power. You've always heard of the power of two, and the power of two being the multiplying effect of, you know, more than just the synergies of one and one, but some multiplying effect. And I think that what life has really taught me is that the power of one, if we really know who we are and how we're connected to the awe, is multiplied by so much greater than just one more. Because after all, one times one is still one, right? It's what's inside of us. It's not really, I'm going to say, not really a multiplier so much as an exponential factor, that we are able to change the world when we know about the power of one, and that one being the one that's inside ourselves. When I was visiting West Point in New York with my husband, he's a West Point grad, I had the opportunity to visit the different chapels and churches. And when I was in the Catholic Church at West Point, New York, I went up to the second floor, and on the second floor, there are some beautiful stained glass there. And I think just sitting there, it was just me, and just looking at it, it really hit me. Oh my gosh, this stained glass has this Bible saying on it. And it's so powerful that not only did it stick with me, but I changed my license plate so that my license plate had 1 Corinthians 3:16. And it's really about the power of one. It's about, do you not know that the temple of God is within you? And like, what? Are you kidding? I mean, seriously, if you know about the Bible, the New Testament, Corinthians is pretty much the oldest of the information that came down to us. And they knew back then, and Christ knew back then, that the temple of God, the house of the Lord, is within us, right? I mean, I love churches and actually synagogues, and I love any kind of place you can go and celebrate with other people some of the most beautiful beliefs we have in the world about brotherly love. But truly, when it comes down to it, the reason that all these people around this world who have, they come from all kinds of indigenous backgrounds, from Indians and American Indians and Chinese and European and, you know, anywhere in the United States. The reason that we all have these same beliefs and these same backgrounds is because we're all connected internally to truth. And people who are isolated in some of these South American countries that have never had a TV or a radio, they have this, the same beliefs. So at some point you go, what's going on? So the power of one, if you're connected through your own internal heart and doing the right things and feeling at peace as much as you can with decisions that you make that come from the right space, then you are able to make anything happen in this world. And we're not all in that all the time, you know, at least we walk the part of being human, but we're also connected. Yeah. So this is why I'm excited. I get to talk about that.
Yeah. Well, it's setting out with intention to be mindful, right? About, you talk about that space within or the light within, which is about, you know, what our next children's book is about, helping each other, whether you're a child or an adult, find the light within. And I always talk about Brené Brown, and she has a beautiful quote, and it says, "People are like stained glass windows. They sparkle and shine when the sun is out. But when the darkness sets in, their beauty is revealed only if there is a light from within." And there's another quote that I love by Leonard Cohen, which says, "There is a crack in everything. That is how the light gets in." So I just love this whole concept. This is what you and I are about. You're my people. Tell everyone a little bit about your background, because I didn't give you a formal introduction.
I want to talk about acts of kindness. So it's the little acts of kindness that one person will do for another that can be absolutely life-changing. And you'll never know maybe how life-changing that it will be.
Yes.
When you do it at just the right moment, it's the most impactful change that can occur, because it goes to the root, to the heart of a person. So, for example, and I'm going to talk about this first. When I was younger, my family did not have a lot of money. And, you know, at one point, my dad was a teacher and they were on strike and we had no funds coming in. My mom was a homemaker and there were five kids. And at one point, you know, we literally had $20 for food for the week. And I had a shopping cart, one of the kind that you pull behind you that like grannies used to use. Well, we had one because we didn't have a car.
Yeah.
And I was walking over to the supermarket, and I dropped the $20 bill. I think I might have been about 12 years old. I didn't realize it till I got to this store. And when I saw I didn't have the 20, I went into a bit of a panic. I mean, I could make that 20 spread with spaghetti and sauce and bread that we could get for 39 cents. But I knew what that 20 meant to the house. And I knew that if I lost it, we had seven people who might not be eating that week. And the tremendous amount of pressure that was when I realized that I had lost it. So I took the cart and I just started walking back down the road that I had come up. And I lived in the far northeast of Philadelphia. So it was the road was near. See, I just turned off of Byberry onto Barbary and passed Dunks Ferry Road. And that's where I must have lost the $20 bill. But at some point, I'm walking up and down this one block and I'm crying because I now have totally realized that I did lose the 20 and my family was going to go hungry.
Right. You're feeling like you're letting them down.
Yeah. No, I didn't just feel it. I knew that I had done something that was just really awful, and it wasn't purposeful, but sometimes $20 can change a lifetime. And this was one of those $20 bill stories. This man comes out of his house in a row home. He must have seen me going up and down the block, pulling this shopping cart and crying. Aww. I can't really tell this story. It always gets me. He said, what are you looking for? Can I help you? Aww. And I really didn't want to talk to him. I was feeling so badly, but he insisted, what is the matter? And I said, I lost my $20 bill. Mm. And this man looked at me and he reached in his pocket and he pulled it out and he said, I found it. Aww. And I have to tell you, he goes, and he pointed to this tire of this car that was nearby. He goes, it was right under that tire. And he must have known that I was not going to accept charity. Yeah. I mean, I was poor but proud, yeah. And I wasn't going to accept charity. And so I was so grateful, and I was so thankful, and I was so relieved. Mm-hmm. And it had to be, 20 years later when I was thinking about that story, and yeah. I realized that man did not find that $20 bill.
Yep.
So I started the first nonprofit in our country to grant wishes to seniors. Those who are 65 and older can't afford to make their own wishes come true, but still have something that they want to do in life or something that they need in life as a necessity. And I realized that sometimes we have time, but not the money. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we have the money, but not the time. Mm-hmm. And there are wishes that need to come true. And I realized that we never know the impact that we're going to have in this world at the moment that we make that decision.
That's right.
And when I realized that that man made that decision to help somebody that he didn't know, and for him, it might not have been a big deal, but for us, it was everything for the week.
I'm sure it was a big deal for him. Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I'll never know who he is to say thank you. So I say thank you to a lot of people. I grant a lot of wishes for people.
Tell us the name of the foundation, because that's how you and I met.
The name of our foundation that grants wishes to the seniors, it's called Twilight Wish Foundation, and it's for the twilight years. So those who have wishes in their twilight years, Twilight Wish Foundation.
How can let's do this and get this out of the way. I like to do it in the beginning and at the end. Give them a way that they can find out more about your foundation.
So we have this excellent website, twilightwish.org. We are a 501c3 charitable organization registered in quite a few states, and we have been granting wishes across the entire United States. We're headquartered in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, which is where I launched back in 2003. So we've been granting wishes for 17 years. We've granted 3,333 wishes at this point.
That's amazing.
Every other day we grant a wish. And it's been our average since we started every other day in this country. Never know what they're going to be. They can be fun, crazy, off the wall kind of things that someone's wanted to do, like go up in a fighter jet or, well, that's a crazy wish that we actually did do. Or a biplane or...
Or the drive a tractor trailer across country.
Yeah, or drive a 18-wheeler across the country. We did that wish.
And a woman did that.
Yeah, and a very feisty woman, by the way, who was 82 at the time, and now she's 89, and she's also been featured on Ink Masters, getting a big phoenix inked onto her back. That's our Marguerite Kirsch down in Florida.
I love it.
Yeah, we have granted so many different amazing wishes. Veterans like to go one more time, and they like to walk on the deck of a destroyer one more time. They want to go see a space that they've been years since they were at, so... They want to go back to it in calmer times. We've done so many veteran wishes. Some veterans, too, very simple wishes. They have carpet that's been torn up in their house. They're using a walker, and they would like a new carpet, and they can't afford it. And we've done so many wishes for veterans.
Some of the things that we just take for granted. I mean, I remember bringing my dad to have lunch with you because I told him all about you and he wanted to meet you. And we met the recipient of the very first wish. Can you tell me about that and how special that was?
So when I was first starting, I really felt like it was an answer to a prayer. So there's the whole story behind this, and we'll talk about that. But I had prayed, what is it you want me to do, Lord? And why did you save me when I was 9 years old in a hit and run? And so here I was, it was 30 years after that, 39 years old. And I was saying, finally, I was ready to say, Lord, why'd you save me? What is it you want me to do? And as I was praying on that, which, is kind of an interesting process because you don't always get your answers right away. But I did get them in several different pieces that came to me over the next year. And I was like, really? You want me to do that? You want me to grant wishes for seniors? And when I first said I was going to do this, a friend of mine, he worked in a nursing home, and he said, I would really like to help you with this, and I'll ask my residents what is it they would wish for. And so I'll do a survey for you. And when he gave me the survey, there was this list of things that people wanted to get their hair done and go to a nice dinner one more time. Somebody wanted to go to the zoo and see a certain kind of animal. It was really kind of cute wishes, very simple wishes too. And this one woman wished for a tombstone for her son named Isaiah, who had passed away. And he had no family, no children, no wife. And she had no money, and she could not afford a tombstone for him.
Wow.
And now she's in a nursing home, and that's her wish. And so I guess when I heard that wish, my whole idea of bringing happiness and joy to seniors, it shifted on a dime because I realized, my goodness, it's not about happiness and joy. It's about comfort and joy. And sometimes just to be comforted and knowing that your son is not laying in an unmarked grave, but has a stone where, you know, he can be remembered is the biggest, most important thing we can do for someone.
Yeah.
So anyway, the more I thought about that wish, I thought, we have to do that. That has to be the first wish that we grant. Her name was Margaret, and that became the first wish that we granted. And I was not used to asking anybody for anything. My father had us brought up where you don't ask for anything. Remember, I wasn't going to ask for, you know, that $20. And so I had to make a phone call and ask if somebody would donate a tombstone. And it was the hardest call I ever will ever have to make in my entire life.
Wow.
But when they said yes, it changed everything. And Margaret's wish for the tombstone was granted back in January. It was January 16th of 2004. We did the unveiling, and we had her Baptist minister from where she used to live there. And we had all the people from Twilight Wish, all the people from her nursing home. And it was so beautiful. My sister bought her a new hat and a new dress and a new coat. And Margaret's in a wheelchair.
You have a picture of it and her with a tear coming down her face in your book, Moments.
Yes, Twilight Wish Moments. Yeah. So that was the moment. And then we went out to a lunch, and she got two pieces of cheesecake, and she was so thrilled. And every single January 16th from that day, I would go to see her for 9 years. And you met me one time, and we had lunch with her and your father.
Yeah, it was amazing.
After 9 years, she passed away. And I'll never forget that day either, because that January 16th, I went with three different things that I was going to give her. There were two stuffed animals and a baby doll. And when we got there and I realized that she was no longer alive, I knew I was there with those items for a reason. And would you believe the people who worked in that nursing home found the exact people to give them all to? The one woman who got the doll, she felt like it was a baby, and she was just so ecstatic to be able to hold that baby. And the one man who got the tiger, he loves tigers, and it was his birthday.
Oh.
And he you know, it was just one of those God things. He felt like it was a birthday gift from the universe for him. So
Absolutely.
I felt like I was supposed to be there, and the whole event was just amazing.
Oh my goodness.
That's everything. It always comes out that way.
Now, let me ask you a question. Let's go back. And if you've told me this before, I don't know if I had a brain blip. You said you survived a hit and run at the age of 9.
Yes. So do you want to know about it?
Well, the thing that strikes me, my little one was 9 and survived a hit. And so we have a deep connection. I mean, you don't have to go into that if you don't want to. I'm perfectly fine with that. But as you said that, I'm sitting here silently saying, oh my gosh, that's one other thing that I just, amazing thing that I didn't know about Cass.
Right. So here's the story, because it's helped define my whole life, right? I mean, at this point, I believe I'm here on a mission. I really believe I'm purpose-driven. So much has happened. And when you hear and you answer a calling, you're given more to do. So I have so many stories about answering callings and getting more to do. But it all started with many things in my life that led up to it, including being 9 years old. I remember the day. I remember everything that happened that day until the accident. And then God, you know, wipes that out so you don't remember the pain. Mm. But I do remember that day that I had been talking in class. I talk a lot. Mm-hmm. And I did back then. And the teacher said, Mr. Mantle said, I needed to stop talking to my girlfriend, Linda. And for some reason, I had something really important I hadn't finished telling her. I had to finish my story. The next thing you know, he gives us both a letter to take home to our parents. Mm-hmm. I was devastated. Right. I was a 4.0. I didn't even know what a 4.0 was. I was an A student. I never got in trouble. And here I had this letter to bring home. And so I started praying. Oh, be careful what you pray for, right? I started praying, oh, dear Lord, please don't let me have to show this letter to my dad. He'll kill me. He's a teacher. And mm-hmm. if I got in trouble in school, what was going to happen? Mm-hmm. So after school, I went over to my girlfriend Donna's house, but she was busy. And then I went over to my girlfriend Teresa's house, but she was busy. So I was still really sad about this letter. And I was on my bike and I wasn't, I guess, I can't even tell you. I don't remember what happened. I just remember I got to Morning Glory Road.
Wow.
And the crossing guard found me. Apparently, I'd been hit and run, left in the street. And she knew my face. And she knew that I had said I came from Sweetbriar Road. And there were two Sweetbriars. So the crossing guard, once the ambulance came and took me, she went up and down every Sweetbriar until she found my parents.
Wow.
But I was no longer... I guess I went over the bike. I landed on my face. My face was completely, it was a mess. It was swollen. But in that moment, I don't remember the accident. I don't remember anything except being in the light of Christ. And I was in the most beautiful place. And it was shimmering. And I didn't even know what had happened at this point. All I knew was I was in this amazing spot. And I was being lifted up and heading towards this greater light. And the closer I got to this figure in the light, the more my body felt better and happier and easier. And it just was this feeling that I know even today we don't have a word for it. So, you know, ethereal, etheric.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
It was, you know, lighthearted. When people say be lighthearted, mm-hmm. it's this idea that we don't have a weight associated with us. It's like right. Our soul is so free. Right. We're such free spirits right. And we're caught in this body. But I didn't know all that. All I knew was the closer I got to this figure who I saw as Christ right there in front of me, the closer I got, there was like a sort of like a white light. Yeah. And that made me feel like everything in the world was okay. Mm-hmm. Now, as that's happening, there's information being shared, and I couldn't tell you today what it all is, but I knew I was clear on it back then.
Right.
And then here's what happens. Like at some point, it was like a clap. And when the clap happened and my eyes opened, I was strapped down inside an ambulance, headed to Nazareth Hospital. Didn't know any of that either.
Nazareth.
Nazareth.
Oh, my goodness.
So I look up and the top of the ambulance is all white metallic. And I went from this beautiful white crystalline light of happiness and peace and to this harsh, oh my gosh, I'm aching.
Tin can.
And I don't know what happened. And I'm trapped because they had me strapped down and I couldn't move at all. And looking at some metal, mm-hmm. white metal.
Yeah.
Wow. I think I started screaming.
Sure. Sure. You were scared.
Then they pulled me out at Nazareth Hospital on the ambulance, on the stretcher, and my dad was there. And as he starts patting my head, oh, it's okay, Catherine. I don't know what he's talking about. It's okay. I still didn't even know what had happened. But what did affect me was being in the light as a 9-year-old. The thing I knew is that we are all supposed to love each other, that we are supposed to take care of each other, every single one of us. So what happened is I was like, what's wrong with all the adults? Mm-hmm. Why don't they know that we're just supposed to love each right. other? I had such a hard time mm-hmm. understanding some of what I was seeing from people mm-hmm. all around. And it was kind of a little bit rough knowing more than the adults knew and having to play the games and their rules,
right?
You know, but anyway, it never left me. And more happened as I got older.
Yeah, that's amazing. So, hey, it wasn't your time yet. it was not your time yet. And you and I believe wholeheartedly that we all have a purpose. We are here for a reason. And how great can it be if we can play a part in helping in some way to help someone discover what their purpose is? What a gift.
And I don't even want to use the word purpose, but because actually, I actually feel like it might be softer just saying answering a calling. It's not just one calling, you know. You will be called to do different things along the way. It's as simple as you're called to smile at somebody walking past you on the street.
Yes.
You're called, you get a little notice inside you that says, you know, turn around and give that person something that's in your hand. You know, give this person a flower. Do this, do that. This calling becomes like you just know. I always say it's almost like a knowing for me. But callings can be just not as big and deep as, oh, I have to find my purpose. No. Don't even worry about that. Because that'll happen. You know, if you have a God-given purpose, you're not going to mess it up. It's going to happen. But if you have like little moments where as long as you start to say yes, and the more you say yes, the more it'll be validated and the more you'll do yes for bigger things.
I love that. Say yes to the moment.
Say yes to the small ones and the bigger ones will happen. Say yes to, you know, I feel like I'm supposed to treat that person to a cup of coffee who's right next to me. Maybe you feel like they're not having a good day. And it doesn't matter. I want everyone to know this. If you're going to treat someone to a cup of coffee, don't judge them whether they have money and can afford it or not, because you're missing the whole point. People can have a bad day, and it doesn't matter whether they have money or not. And you buying a cup of coffee for someone could lift their spirits. And if you lift someone's spirits, there's nothing better you can do in the entire world. Because lifting one person's spirits lifts everybody's spirits. We're all in this together, right? We are all in this together. So when you get that prompting to do something nice for someone, and I do mean nice, so you know it's coming from a place in your heart. It's unconditional. You don't expect to get something back for it, because if you do, you're ruining the whole moment. And it doesn't mean something nice can happen, but don't expect anything.
Absolutely.
That's the whole randomness, the whole random act of kindness. And, you know, I really believe in that.
Me too.
And Twilight Wish is about acts of kindness. And it's a whole bunch of people who will do for other people they don't know. Yeah. And seeing that is where love is based. That's where miracles happen. We have so many miracles surrounding Twilight Wish over the thousands of wishes that we've granted. So many things where you go, how'd that happen? But you know it's not us. Yeah. I mean, we even thank everybody, angels on all levels, because some of the miracles that happen have to do with dates when, for example, I always like to think about this, who's got the smallest baseball field? Anyway, let me just tell you the story. The smallest field there is, and there's no extra tickets. And I should know, it's probably going to be like Red Sox. We got a wish from a woman named Alice, who was in her 80s, whose husband passed away, and they had never gone to a game. And they wanted, the kids wanted her mom to get to a game before she passed away. And when we called to ask her tickets for granting wishes, we didn't know the day that we would have tickets to send her, because we had to wait till somebody would give tickets back and say, go ahead and donate them. So about 2 weeks later, we get a call that Friday, they're going to have two tickets for us to grant this wish. So we call the daughter. In fact, I had a 17-year-old who was volunteering from a high school call, and she got the daughter on the phone, and the daughter was so excited. She goes, Mom, come here. We have a wish we're granting for you. You don't even know, right? She found out she was going to go to the game on the day that would have been the day of her husband's birthday. And she felt like it was her husband reaching back and saying, this is your gift. I'm like, then that's the kind of stuff that always happens. Sorry, I screwed my story up because I don't remember the details of it all.
No, you're fine. We get it. Yeah, absolutely. I always ask people this. If you can think of who helped to make you into the person you are today, they could be here, they could be far away, they could be in heaven. They could be people that you've met or never met and maybe have just inspired you. If you could take a minute and reflect, who would that be?
There are so many. So I'm going to just tell the story of two mothers. My mother, she was a very kind soul. She was artistic. She was beautiful and very loving. Never said bad words about anybody. She was actually too nice for this world. And when I was 16, she passed away. And then my stepmother, so my mother's name was Mary Ella. And then my stepmother came into the picture, married my father the year after, and her name is Kathleen Mary. And she was a head surgical nurse for Jean's Hospital for 28 years. She was very very independent woman, very well loved by people. She always understood people. As an older sister of many, her own brothers and sisters, she really had a knack to know how to get to the heart of what people were feeling. And her position was just amazing. I mean, one time I ended up in her hospital on a Christmas for emergency surgery.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, it was her being there that made me feel like everything was going to be okay. So I would say it would be my two moms, my mom and my stepmom. And I would say both are passed away, and yet I am impacted by both of them in different ways. And even though my mom has passed away, on the 33rd anniversary of her death, I had an event happen. It was a dream. It was so amazingly real. And I had a visit from Archangel Michael. And in that dream, he asked me to swing a sword. And he was this beautiful angel, all in shimmering. Again, going back to that story that happened to me when I was 9, but shimmering. Yeah. Golden and white light. And he was really handsome. And that's all I could see was him standing in front of me, how handsome he was. And he said to me,
he has great hair, doesn't he?
Oh my gosh. He's got great everything. He says, swing the sword. And I look at him. Now I'm me. And I have my little way of laughing, right? And I look down on the ground. There was this beautiful sword and glimmering, and it had jewels. And I looked back up at him and I started laughing. He goes, I don't know what to do with that thing. And I laughed. I was like stunned because he wasn't laughing. He was quite serious. Oh. And he said, just pick it up and swing it. And he was so serious. And I was like, oh, I better not laugh. I better try and do that. So I bent down to pick it up with one hand, and I'm right-handed.
Let me interrupt you for a minute. Okay. I'm going to ask a crazy question, not to take away the impact of the story. When you're dreaming, like, did you realize you were dreaming, or did you think it was a dream? Because you know how sometimes we're having a dream and we don't want to wake up, or it's a bad one and we want to wake up. Did you realize at that moment, what did you think was happening?
I thought this was real. I thought this was actually happening.
Okay.
Right. So I was totally me, and he was totally him, and it was really happening. And so I bent down, and I tried to pick it up with one hand, and it was so heavy that I actually had to go down with both knees, and I picked it up with two hands.
Okay.
And when I stood back up, I just remembered what he said, just swing it. So I pulled it back, I guess, to the right, because I'm right-handed. And I went to swing it. Now the air is empty. There's nothing. I'm seeing nothing. And I'm thinking it's just going to swing through the air with my weight. But when I go to swing it, very thick, really dark, and really heavy. And it took everything I had to get it all the way to the other side, where I then placed it back on the ground, and I popped up. And now I was going to be really proud of myself going, I did it. And before I could finish, I did it, I opened my eyes. And the second I opened my eyes, then I went from this, you know, did I know I was dreaming? No.
Right.
It was real. And then when I opened my eyes, I was still in it. This is the craziest thing. I was still in it. So I knew without a doubt.
Right.
I looked at the clock. The clock said 4:33. And I knew, like my knowings, that I had to have a candle lit by 4:44.
Because he told you, right? He told you that.
I knew it. He didn't say it. A lot of this is not said anyway. It's telepathic. But this, I knew without a doubt, 4:44, I had to have a candle lit. So, and that would make me win whatever this whole sword thing was about. So I got out of bed. I mean, my husband's sleeping, right? It's 4:33 in the morning. I jump, like, run downstairs to the kitchen. I get a big lighter out of the kitchen drawer. I go into the dining room, and I find a little tea light candle. Oh, I race it back up to my bedroom.
Oh, my.
And I got to put the tea light candle in something so I don't burn the house down. And I find this crystal container, and it's all pink crystal. And I put this this tea light candle in it. I light it, and now I feel like, oh, I don't know how long it's been.
Right.
I run back to bed. I jump in.
Oh, my gosh.
And then I open one eye, and I look. Did I make it?
Right.
And as I looked, it was 4:44, and I did it. And I was like,
phew.
I was so proud of myself. The interesting thing about this whole story,
right,
whatever it was, I knew I won at 4:44. And then I went back to sleep, and when I woke up again and went into the bathroom, the tea light candle had burned all the way down. And it said, this is the interesting thing. The candle holder I found that my husband had given me, which came from Victoria's Secret, didn't hit me at the time that I put it in there, mm-hmm. but where the candle had burned,
right.
One word on this pink crystal candle holder, and the word was love. Mm. And I just knew there was some symbolic meaning about it. So I realized, yeah. And I do tell people this, that after you pull your sword through your heavy stuff in your life, mm-hmm. you don't actually mm-hmm. win this game of life until you light the candle of love afterwards. Mm. It's very symbolic.
Yes, it is.
So on top of that, that same day, I recognized it as being the 33rd anniversary of my mom's passing. I didn't know it that night when I had the dream. But that day, mm-hmm. I realized, oh my goodness. And I didn't realize that I was being given a gift from the Holy Spirit. Until that day, I said to my husband, Bill, I need a Bible. I'm raised Roman Catholic. I don't have my own Bible, right? I never did. Mm-hmm. And he's Methodist, right. And they all have their own Bibles, him and the kids. And all of a sudden that day, which I could never read a Bible, not all the way through, because I would get to those names and they would be like gobbledygook to me.
You and I had that discussion.
Yeah, that's what happened to me. And even like 6 months earlier, I had that happen. So that day, I tell him this. The next day, he comes home with his purple leather Bible, and it was, I don't know, I opened it, and instead of reading gobbledygook, I was given a gift from St. Michael, and it's the words. So I pulled the sword, and you take the word sword, and you put the S in the opposite place, and it's words. I was given the gift.
Oh, wow.
I could read anything and everything, and not only that, I understood it with insights. And when I got to, Lisa, you're going to love this part of the story.
I got goosebumps.
When I got to 40, I was reading something about that Christ said, and it was actually funny because it was about how the people in your hometown don't recognize who you are. And that's what happened to Christ. Right. And I started laughing, right. And I saw that I was at 44. And I turned the page back, and I was to see, and I was at 4:44.
Oh,
it was
cool.
John 4:44.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I'm like, oh my gosh. And then I read from 4:33 down to 4:44, and it was about the Samaritan woman at the well. And you know, I grant wishes, and yeah. I have wells everywhere. I had well planters.
Yeah.
I have iCard's picture of the woman at the well. Yeah. I have wells everywhere. I'm like, yeah. Oh my gosh. Even when I got married, I had a little ceramic old wishing well that people put pennies into for my wedding to bless it. So I'm like, what am I, the woman at the well? I am the woman at the well.
You're the well wisher.
I got so many stories to pull people to Christ. It's unbelievable.
we're gonna have to have you come back, because you really do. You've had an amazing life. You're living an amazing life. You're creating moments that matter for so many. And the fun thing about it is, don't you find, I always say, it takes courage to make a bid for connection. But I've found, even just starting this podcast, the people that you meet, I mean, your whole world opens up. And, you know, when you're out to answer your calling, right, when you answer the call, when you say yes to the moment, people that are of like mind start being attracted to you, and you start meeting more and more and more people of the same. Do you find
right.
that?
I always say that, you know, granting wishes, I get to meet the best of people. And then it almost, you almost forget that there is another side sometimes. But honestly, if you believe in the best of people, you're going to meet that, the best in people. It just does pull. It does pull it in. So, which isn't to say that there isn't another side. I mean, honestly, what is it that was so heavy and dark that I had to pull that sword through? And we all have it here. We're all in this battle of good versus evil and that duality. But some people say when we release anything but thinking about the good, which is what your show is doing, is pulling in the good, then we can exist in that space. We can be in that space. And that's what brings more people to it. And that's ultimately what we're trying to do, is to get everyone to get to that space. And if we could all do it at the same time, peace will be in the world.
Right, right. That's that collective moment. And something that I was thinking about this week, I thought, and I've been guilty of it, you know, sometimes you don't realize how quick you can come to judge people and situations. I think it's just a part of human nature. So it's something that it's important to be mindful about. And also, you know, I think we're dealing with a climate right now where people are losing their jobs, not because they did anything wrong, it just because of the economy and businesses like mine having to go on temporary hold, and some of them, unfortunately, so sadly, are shutting down. But, you know, there's an identity that's attached to that job and that livelihood, and then there's a certain amount of pride. Along with pride, sometimes can come a fear of asking for help. And one of the things that I want to try and inspire people to do who are listening is going through a tough time and somebody's extending a hand to help you. Or even if they're not, and you know you need it, whether it's emotionally, financially, physically, please don't let pride get in the way. Ask for help.
Say yes.
Say yes. Because there are so many people, right, that are looking for good things to do right now, good ways,
yes.
You know, ways that they can contribute, because it's healing for us, for people who want to help. We're looking for ways to help because it helps us heal and feel like we're doing something, we're contributing, right?
Right. Saying yes is an opportunity for the person who's offering to do good in this world. And every opportunity where we do good in this world helps elevate our soul. It helps us fulfill the reasons that we're here. So I would have to say, I was raised not to ask, but now I ask. And I do know, I know clearly from granting over 3,333 wishes that unless people ask, you can't grant their wish. Unless they have a wish, it can't be granted. So don't be afraid to ask. You're worthy. Yeah. You are worthy. You don't have to be in a situation where you're dying. You're worthy right now.
You know, it makes me think about the condition that we all are really just this side of being okay. And that can mean a number of different things any day. I remember when I auditioned, I was right out of school. I hadn't done school plays. I had always played an instrument. I was in the pit. But I always thought it would be fun to be on stage. And I always liked to sing and kick around, right? And I remember I got an opportunity. I tried out for The King and I tried out for Carousel. And I had loved both ever since I was a little girl. But I always loved Shirley Jones. And I remember the story about Carousel. And I got the lead. And then at the same time, they offered me the role of Tub Tim for The King and I thought, oh my goodness, I get to choose. So I chose Carousel, and I'll never forget, there was a newspaper that came out, and they said, Ozalis sings just this side of confidence, because I was very stiff on stage, because I was so worried about it, because it's a pretty hard score, you know, it's kind of a bit operatic, you know, and I was so afraid to move that I was going to forget the words, my lines, or the notes. And I thought that really applies to life, that we're all, even though you may be okay today, look, we're all just this side of being okay. And tomorrow it could be a different story. In an hour it could be a different story. So be kind and help each other. because you just never know what the next moment is going to bring.
I agree. Beautiful. And thank you for writing the Twilight Wish song.
Oh, you're welcome. Boy, was that an honor. I pulled it out on Twilight's Wings and I looked at the lyrics. And you know, whether you're young or old, I think the lyrics speak to the idea that we all want to be heard, we all want to be validated, and we all have a story. So I'll just read a couple pieces of the verses from the song. It starts out by saying, in every life there lies a story that has a yearning to be told, and in that story lies a someone who once a child now grows old. And then I think what speaks to what I just said about, you know, listening and give me your time, undivided, undistracted. It says, what I long for in this twilight is a moment of your time. It might not seem to make a difference, but it's a moment I call mine. So, dear friend,
I know you know how much I love you, but I'm going to tell the world, I love this woman. This woman has contributed so much to making me a better person and to filling my heart in so many different levels. And I hope that you will visit the website. Give it to our listeners one more time.
It's twilightwish.org, twilightwish.org. And we're also on Facebook. You can find us there and you can find us on Twitter. And I love you too, Lisa. And I feel like whenever I'm with you, there's magic that happens.
Aww.
So you are an amazing woman.
Wow. Ah, the feeling's mutual.
Okay. Well, I see another show coming very soon.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about my trips to Israel.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know what? I got nothing but time right now. So we're going to do it, and we're going to do it sooner rather than later. Okay.
Okay. I like it.
All right. All right. Well, I love you and be well.
I wish everybody that an act of kindness happens to you and from you in the next few days.
Ditto. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.